Across the Park podcast is proud to be sponsored by Globe Gas and Heating. For the best kitchen and bathroom renovations, boiler servicing and repair, and central and underfloor heating in the Northwest, head over to globecentralheating.com and quote Across the Park for a free quote.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Across the Park podcast. Myself, Gary Judge, and Ian Mills bringing this week's episode to you as always. Just a quick mention, and I'm not going to mention other guests or other shows before people moan at me because we've had that before. I just want to give a plug to our sponsors who were obviously mentioned at the start of the show. Absolutely top outfit. And the most frustrating thing about Glow is that it's hard to actually get booked them in because they're that busy. But I've just had a notification this morning on my social media that they are taking bathroom bookings for August. So if you are looking to get your bathroom done, make them your first stop. Honestly, you will not regret it. Get them round, get them to have a look, give you a price. I guarantee from the quality of the work, you won't get a better price. So give them a shout. You can catch them. They're tagged in our social media on our Instagram. But if not, it's Globe Heating and Globe Heating and Plumbing, and we'll have it in the description of our podcast. So without further ado, Millsy, we're going to kick off with some of the topics for this week. So I'm looking at my phone here, I'm not being rude, and just reminding myself of what we're going to go through. So the first one I'm going to bring up is very, very recent. It's come out in the press over the last 24 hours, and it's heavy rumours being published by the Mail more than anything else about a rumoured takeover from 777. They are a consortium that have been mentioned quite heavily over the last 6 months, but there is rumour that a bid has been tabled of around $600 million to purchase Farhad Moshiri's majority shareholding in the club. Again, I must stress they are rumours, but it's the first time I think that a proper media outlet has really, you know, gone with it as a full-on story. Thoughts on that, Millsy? And I guess, you know, do you think there's anything in it?
I think the fact that Alan Myers is talking about it is credible. The Daily Mail, you know, as credible as they can be, they're a bit hit and miss. They do put things out there that you know, there's a certain journalist out there
who hates
us, and he'll put anything out there to dig at us. But look, there's Alan Myers talking about Alan Myers is a big Evertonian, works for Sky Sports, and he's saying there's something in it. He's saying that there's been talks for a while, not only with the 777 group at MSP, who were at the Southampton game in January. If you remember that they're still in it. I think the difference reading between the lines here is 777 have basically gone for a full takeover. So I think it's going to be preference of Moshiri. Does Moshiri now see this as his way out and to get out of it alive? Or does he mean what he said when he spoke to Jazz Bow at the fan engagement video, where he just wants investment and he wants to be here and see this job through? I think something's definitely happening. And again, we always say on this, we don't like to, you know, assume and talk for everybody and things, but I think...
No, don't do that, Millsy, whatever you do. We'll get
to that. Look, I think even about staunch supporters or the guys and girls who aren't completely against the current regime, I think maybe if you really poke them, they'd say that the relationship between them and supporters is probably not going to ever improve. Now, that's not good for the football club, that's not good for the football supporters. I think change is needed. For whatever reason, change is needed. I think it is. I've got my own personal beliefs, which I've said on this. I don't think Everton ran well. I think the banner that says you couldn't run a bath is quite appropriate. I know you're not as strong your opinions as me on that, but again, I'll put it to you, because you're not as strongly opinionated as me against the current regime, you're probably the better person to ask. Where do you sit with a possible full takeover, which will mean Farhad Moshiri is no longer the majority shareholder?
I think the latter, I couldn't really, I'm not really asked. I've got nothing personally. I don't feel any personal debt to Farhad Moshiri. Obviously, we have said a number of times he's pumped money into the club, whether that's his money or someone else's is anyone's guess, really. But he's clearly made some poor decisions, and you know, I think by his own admission, it's not gone the way that he would have planned. It's certainly not gone the way the fans would have liked it to have gone. It's not been a great few years for Everton. So I think any change that is going to, you know, steer the ship in the right direction is welcome. There's also that lingering doubt, and that those words that ring in my ear, be careful what you wish for. Despite the mismanagement, and it's definitely been that, and despite the lack of, you know, strategy at the top end of the club, there's not been, you know, he hasn't left us in the lurch. He hasn't completely, you know, sold every asset that we've got. That hasn't been his agenda per se. And that could easily happen. We could bring in, you know, 777 or MSP in a full takeover, and they could just decide they're going to strip the club of all assets and try and just run it on a shoestring. I don't think that's been the case. It's just been that the money that has been invested has been spent poorly.
Well, that's the one danger, isn't it, really? Because if this owner does want out, then he's not really going to care who he sells it to. There's not going to be that due diligence. There's going to be... you're talking about Mascheri there and his tenure and what he's done. I think if something does happen, we'll do a prolonged video on this. But I liken it... I was speaking to some lads in work on this. I liken it to going to... He's gone to a poker table with his mates or a roulette table with his mates, and he's the rich one, and his mates are in the kitty, and he's just launching money at it. He's risk, risk, risk. And everyone around him's going... Stop it. Like, you're killing us. You want to hurt us. We can't afford it. You can. The Carlo Ancelotti, the James Rodriguez, the three director of footballs,
three number tens.
We overspent in probably three summers. We didn't have the capability to do what we did. And look, if you get in the Champions League after one of those summers, everything's great and the gambles work, but it hasn't. I think there's a lot in it, Judgy. I think, looking even without any intel, I think if I was Sherry, I wouldn't really want to be sticking around.
Yeah, there's no smoke without fire. And as you've just pointed out at the end there, it's not been a particularly pleasant experience for him. You can't imagine it has been. There hasn't been any success of note, a couple of victories here and there, but you wouldn't say, relative to the amount of money that's been put into the club, that, you know, he's had any return. So I think if he gets out relatively scot-free, that's a result for him. Yeah. I think, provided that the consortium or the owners, or, you know, come in and address the lack of a senior management team of any real credibility, and start to get, as I said before, the ship moving in the right direction, and, you know, enforce some more responsible and strategic thinking, then that can only be a positive. So yeah, I might not feel as passionately, I'm not as passionately against the current owner, but, you know, even the most pragmatist of supporters would agree that there's definitely a better way of going about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's plain to see from even the outside. We do shows, don't we, with opposition fans, and one of the regular questions we ask is what's your opinion on Everton? And it's always directed towards the owner. It's never directed towards, look, we've had some poor managers, we've had some managers who were a really terrible fit. And I don't even get people saying that manager's crap or that manager's whatever. It always seems to be your owner's a joke. Like, he's running you into the ground. So, look, it's a divisive opinion, and the podcast is meant to be for everyone. So my personal opinion is, look, I do welcome it. I think it's time for change. However, there is a little bit of fear, because I don't think the due diligence will go into whoever he sells to.
No, it's a fair point. Well, just on the subject of opposition podcasts, we always try our best to get an opposition fan on or a podcast on. We were successful this week. I recorded a podcast with Dave from Talking Wolves yesterday. We've had Talking Wolves on before, you know, highly knowledgeable lads, proper match goers. And again, yesterday's episode was no different. So we'll look to air that probably around tomorrow afternoon, once this particular episode, so Friday afternoonish, once this episode has a little bit of a chance to breathe.
You had some big accusations last week. I think it's time maybe just to have a moment on this. I was sitting with a glass of wine on Friday night. Twitter, and notifications. I'm getting called a copite. I'm getting called all sorts of things.
You weren't getting called a copite.
The Across the Park podcast Twitter. What have I said here? And there's you. And I think it's probably a good time to clarify. I think, reading between the lines, you probably meant to say the lads who sit by you have got the same opinion. It was said a little bit out of context, wasn't it? But it went viral. So maybe a good time to just address it.
I think there's two things. One, it wasn't an opposition podcast. It's not a Liverpool podcast per se, but there's no two
it's
ways about it.
It's perceived by some.
Yeah, well, look, Andy Grant's a massive red. You know, there's no getting around that. He's a massive red. He's a good friend of mine. He's asked me to come on and help out with the podcast, which I was happy to do. I enjoy talking to Andy. Andy's got me into a topic that I feel quite passionately about, which is Jordan Pickford. And look, just to set the record straight, I don't take back what my opinion is on the fact that I think the club would be better off selling Jordan Pickford. Yeah. It's not to say that I don't think he's a world-class keeper. It's not to say that he hasn't dug us out a few times and been there for us. It's not to say he's not been our most consistent performer. Andy put it quite well when we spoke about it on his podcast this week, and he just said the way that he took it was, if you were playing fantasy footy and you had a keeper that was 20-odd million and you could sell him to buy better midfielders to get you more points, that's literally all I was saying. And that's my take on it.
I'm looking forward to seeing this week's. You're back on this week. I'm looking forward to seeing what you said there. Are you going to say that you're seeing the fucking headlock or something and get us into
Oh, no, we had a good joke about it this week, and I must have said a few times, don't be trying to get me into another one, Andy. I think you're right what you said before as well. I can't speak for all Evertonians, and clearly Twitter spoke for me and said that I was wrong in assuming that most Evertonians has a similar opinion to me.
Most of our mates do. I knew what you meant, because most of our mates do, and I knew what you meant, but it's hard to convey that, isn't it? So, look, I've gone on to bat with you. If anyone is a little bit angry with it, look, it's out of context, and I really hope that everyone is just going to, you know, not do what they said and they're going to unsubscribe and stuff. I really hope it wasn't.
No, listen, do you know on that one, Millsy, and I might be being controversial again, unsubscribe then. Anyone who listens to our podcast knows, you know, I've had that opinion for quite some time, and I don't pretend to be the voice of the fans. I never will be. No one should be. Likewise, I also didn't take a survey outside Goodison to confirm that statement I made. I'm not a professional pundit. We don't sit here and go through the statistics before we come on. We come on and talk about Everton and our own opinions. But
there's a good chance to ask for people to subscribe, like, and share, or is that
again? I can't tell them to unsubscribe and then subscribe at the same time. But the point is, people who enjoy listening to us talk, you know, listen to us on a regular basis. And in fairness to them, a few of them did pop up on Twitter and defend me, which was nice to see. A few of them didn't, but you know, I'm not bothered. I'm big enough and I've got thick enough skin to take stick like that. The only thing I'd say is, come on, don't make it personal. Like, people are saying they'd see me walking through Crosby as if, like, there was a suggestion that I should be attacked for it. Come on. But just for the record, I sit in the park end. You know, I sit in row M, seat.
Don't do it.
I'm there every week. If you want to come up and speak to me in my seat, I'm happy to do so. I go down the bar at our time and have a pint. I'd rather just come up and hear that to me than do it on Twitter when I'm not actually on Twitter. But anyway, that's it. That's my piece on it. And I'll remember in future to say that all opinions, as a disclaimer, are my own, not of the podcast and not of any other Evertonian.
Fair enough.
I lost my train of thought there, but thanks for bringing that up.
I said to you, we'll talk about it, and you know, we've talked about it. Let's move on.
Anyway, moving on, and someone actually jokingly put a tweet, tagged us into a tweet about this, which was fair play. It was good banter. Just a bit of credit for Everton Ladies this season. Obviously, they've moved into, you know, what's been their home temporarily for a few seasons, but they've firmly established Watmore Park as their home now. It looks the part. They get a regular support down there. I noticed, and this is what brought it to my attention, Dave Downey posted something. He was at the Arsenal game, I think it was last night.
I was there last night as well.
It was a sellout, and obviously Arsenal coming to town is for the ladies is a big occasion. Them and Chelsea are, you know, royalty when it comes to the, you know, women's football game. But a very credible mid-table finish for the women this year, and it's a tough league. You know, they finished sixth, and with the exception, I think it was maybe Brighton who finished above them, or one place above them. The rest of the sides are top sides with massive investments, and it's not the case, you know, with Everton Ladies. I wouldn't say they're underinvested in, but certainly compared to the top three or four sides up there, they're nowhere near on the same level in terms of money. So, looks like they're going to finish sixth. They're currently 5 points above Liverpool on the table, and good to see. And I know, Mills, you take Noah along there regularly, your son,
I've took him just a little weird story for anyone who's interested. I don't live too far from her, and in lockdown, when no fans could go to these games, you could hear Zed Cars and hear Spirits of the Blues, and I used to walk my little boy over and stand on the hill, and you could sort of see him. It's not the case no more. They put all nets up, but that was my first experience of taking my little boy to the Everton women's game. And since then, as a season ticket holder, and he's a member, you can get free tickets. So I've took him to probably half the games this season, and I took him to Anfield where Everton women won. And as a four-year-old Evertonian at the time, that was magic to him. So I think the women's game is very, very different to the men's game. If anyone's going to the women's game, it's a different atmosphere. My little boy again last night, he got his face painted and he had an ice cream, and you can watch it on the touchline. It's very, very different. And you know, Judgy, sometimes you can hear how kids cheer opposed to how adults cheer, that difference in decibel. And it's very much like that. But the team itself, I think the team have done well this season. I don't think they're the best team by any stretch. I think Man City are up there, Arsenal, Chelsea. But to have a derby win, to put 20,000 people into Goodison Park for the Merseyside derby on Sky Sports, and then to sell out the last game last night, despite being on Sky Sports, I think there's a big movement. I'm quite surprised, judging by the standards. I went into it, and I'm going to open myself up here to probably a little bit of hate. I went into it thinking there wouldn't be a really good standard, and I went into it as a relationship with me and my kids to maybe have that time with them. But some really good players. Everton have got Tony Duggan, who's been unavailable this season because she's has a child. They've got Jess Park on loan from Manchester City, who's a good player. Megan Finnegan, what our right back, who plays for England. There's a really good standard.
Christiansen,
I think she's Danish. Honestly, there's some really, really good players. So I think that was the last home game last night. But I definitely suggest if anyone can get down to watch the women, and if anyone was like me and maybe thinks there's a difference in standard, of course there is, but it's a very, very high standard, and it's really enjoyable. So yeah, I'm glad we touched upon that. I've had some great nights down there with my little boy.
And as I say, look, it was the mid-table finish, which we the men was absolutely snapping hands off right now for a mid-table finish.
But you know what? They've got passionate support. They've got really, really passionate supporters who create an atmosphere, and they hand the song sheets out to the kids. So it's getting to the point where I think a few of these fans are more for the women's team than the men's as well, which is interesting.
Fair enough, and I get that, because as you're saying, then stand, you know, regardless of the whole kids thing and it being a different atmosphere, standing on the touchline and feeling close to those players and being able to high five them when they come off and all that, that's why a lot of fans are drawn to non-league football. I mean, I know you've been down to Bootle a few times. I go down to Marine quite regularly. I've played non-league, and it's a different type of bond you have with the supporters as a player, and certainly as a supporter with the players as well. So. Now, as I say, I thought it was worth a mention coming towards the end of the season, an extremely credible finish. Moving on to back to the men's team, which is what we're primarily on here. You listened to the press conference a little bit then?
We'll get on to Wolves. We're recording now at 2 o'clock on Thursday, so when we get to Wolves, we'll talk about who isn't available.
Well, just before we do, I just want to touch on obviously a major. A major component in this fight, which is not just our points, it's Leeds and Leicester's, aren't there? You know, we've all got two fixtures left now. The permutations are quite clear for all to see now. The simple fact for us, which is a relief, is that it is in our hands. We win both games. There's no other story to it. We're safe. The rest can battle it out from there. But just putting you in the camp for a moment where we don't get 6 points from both games, so that could be 4 points or it could be 3 points. My first question is, do you think Leeds win their next two games?
I think Leeds are the most likely out of them and Leicester. I personally think Leicester are gone. I watched them against Liverpool, and without being, I hate saying this, Liverpool are a level above Leicester, but there was no fight, and I just don't see them getting out of it. I think it's Everton or Leeds. I mean, you had the conversation, didn't we, after the Palace game? We said it's going to go to the last week of the season. Now, by God, after that Newcastle game, I had to snap your hands off to be outside the relegation zone with these two games coming. But to answer your question, I think Leeds have got a fighting chance. I think the fact that they brought
Leeds win these next two games?
Leeds will beat West Ham reserves on Sunday. And Tottenham's the hardest game they've got. You've got to hope that Richarlison has got the blue cape on somehow. I think Leeds win on Sunday, and we'll get to our predictions. I think we're more likely to beat Bournemouth. I think it's going to be a two-man fight. I really do.
I mean, it makes if they win on Sunday, it regardless of our, I mean, if they win on Sunday, regardless of our result, it is going into that last game.
Yeah.
You'd like to think that we go into that last game in front. I mean, I dread to think if we don't, because I know you say, look, Tottenham is going to be their more difficult fixture. But if they're outside that relegation zone going into that game, given the inconsistency of this Tottenham squad, it'd just be a
I think if Allardyce can't bore a draw out of it, and he knows that Everton are likely to beat Bournemouth, I don't know. That's a big one for Allardyce, because Allardyce's his style isn't to go and win a game. We've seen it when we won games, we left the ground going, how do we win 2-0 with no shots? It was boring. So it's not his style. But do you know what, Judge? I know we're going to talk about the ins and outs of the fixtures, but just in general, I'm feeling really, really nervous over it. I'm quite happy that I personally think it's a shootout between two. I think Forest maybe on the last day technically able to be jumped, but I don't think they will. But these two fixtures, we're in a position that I really hoped we'd be in outside the relegation zone with these two fixtures, but it just feels like we're just sitting on a massive, massive knife edge.
Yeah, I mean, you could, obviously it's in our hands. You could also say it in West Ham's hands. I mean, you know, there's so many subplots there, as you just said then. You know, Richarlison, last game of the season, he obviously saved us last time to some extent in his performances and some goals, crucial goals towards the end of last season. But you've got David Moyes, obviously West Ham manager, who's going to be, you know, facing Leeds this weekend and then facing Leicester last game of the season. Leicester could be down by that point if both us and Leeds do win. Yeah. But there's a very good chance that they won't be, and that they could still be in the mix.
Look, I think there's two ways of looking at the West Ham. Now they play tonight, so by the time some people are watching this, you'll know whether they're in the Conference Europa final or not. I really hope that they are. Now, the reason I say that is because I do think if David Moyes plays Danny Ings and he plays a couple of substitutes on Sunday, may be then saying, like, this is my chance to really, like, if I put two in here, the manager's going to think about putting me in the cup final. The flip side of that is, we've seen David Moyes prepare for cup games by not taking league games seriously. How does he set that team up? Make no mistake, he's got no loyalty to this football club anymore. But some fans might think, or might like to think, the romantic way that David Moyes will do Everton a favour. I think David Moyes is thinking about putting a trophy on his winner's medal in his cabinet and doing that to everyone who's doubted him. I don't think he's thinking Everton. And that is the dangerous situation.
I don't see that. It's just the irony of the whole thing, isn't it? The irony of the fact that David Moyes had such a long spell at Everton, successful relative to the resources that he had, but what gets held against them, which is what you're alluding to here, was the fact he didn't win a trophy.
Yeah.
Now has a chance to win a trophy, arguably at Everton's expense.
Yeah, and I honestly don't know how Sunday will go. I think both scenarios I've said there are just as likely as another one. I could turn Sky Sports on Sunday afternoon. I think West Ham could be 2-0 up in 20 minutes. I also think they could be 2-0 down at half-time. I just don't know. And that's why I'm nervous. That's why I'm nervous. There's still, with only just over 1 week left of the season, still so many moving parts.
That's it. I mean, Leicester are in such a... Not only because of the form, which is dour, and the fact that the players seem to have down tools and they got a bit of a clown for a manager, I think, in this situation. To follow up Brendan Rodgers, he's like a poor man's Brendan Rodgers, because he likes to try and go and attack and be ambitious, but he doesn't seem to have the tools from a coaching perspective to work out how to score goals. But, you know, they've got Newcastle on the Monday night, and the reason I say that they are screwed is that by that point, they could know that without a victory, they're down, and they're playing Newcastle away.
Newcastle are getting leg now. They're getting chased.
Yeah.
So they've got to win.
Yeah, exactly. So if they are really, you know, they are struggling. But okay, we're going to move on to, as I said, matters at hand, the stuff that our players, our manager, our club can potentially control, our fans, because the ad plays a huge role as always. It's Wolves on Saturday, 3 o'clock. Personally, I'm glad there's a 3 o'clock Saturday kickoff for a change. At least we go into the rest of the weekend knowing where we stand, and it's like, okay, that's out the way. We're not waiting and looking at all the permutations. You've just been, you know, looking at the updates from the press conference. Just give us some of the highlights so far that we can obviously lead into discussions on.
Yeah, so the manager's press conference has been this afternoon. Dominic Calvert-Lewin to train tomorrow to be assessed, so he's not trained all week. Vitali Mikhailenko, the manager's words, probably not this week, maybe next, not due to train tomorrow. So I think both groin injuries, I think Lewin, from what I'm listening to and what I'm reading, I think if Everton were 0-0 on Sunday against City, Lewin would have played 10 or 15 minutes, but the manager took that out of his hands at 2-0. Mikhailenko, what I believe, is on Saturday with about 15 minutes left of a training session. He pulls up. So he's the more serious one. The problem is Ruben Vinagre is injured. I think the only other left back on the books, I think it's Elijah Campbell, who's the under-21 player. You don't throw him, and he's had no minutes at all. Ben Godfrey is injured. Mason Holgate was a disaster, and I don't agree with booing and catcalling. I don't agree with all that, but he was a disaster. He's not a left back. Do you play Mason Holgate against Adama Traore at left back?
Do you play back five wing backs, which personally, mate, and I know we obviously didn't have Calvert-Lewin on the pitch at that time, and City is arguably, you know, they'd won the game. It was buried. I thought we looked fairly comfortable and actually had a little bit more impetus. I know it's not Dyche's favourite shape, but is it the lesser of two evils in this instance? One, as you said, Holgate's coming off the back of a bit of a leathering from the fans. And also, he's not, listen, regardless what the manager said, he's not had a good game at all. He didn't look, even before, you know, any of them mistakes crept in and stuff like that, he didn't look particularly confident anyway or comfortable at left back. So is that the lesser of two evils? Connor Cody coming in between the two centre-backs.
Connor Cody can't. He's ineligible, isn't he, Cody?
Of course, yeah.
So okay. You're bringing Keane or Holgate in. So on the left of the three, you've got Keane or Holgate helping McNeil.
No, it wouldn't be, would it?
And no left winger in front of McNeil to help McNeil. So McNeil would be isolated.
It'd probably be Holgate to the right-hand side, though, wouldn't it? And
Tarkowski, Mina
in the middle and Tarkowski to the left.
Possibly,
I mean, look, if you're asking me whether I'd rather Mason Holgate play as a right-sided centre-back or a left-back in a back four, I'm probably going for the former.
Does he play Patterson left-back and Holgate right?
In that instance, is that less of a shift? Arguably, it could be, yeah. I do not want to see Mason Holgate left-back. And that is not a personal attack on Mason Holgate, despite the fact that both of us do sit in the park end. I wasn't one of the people booing, and I, like yourself, I don't really condone that, particularly whilst they're playing for us and they're still trying. I don't think he's a great player, but I certainly don't want to see Mason Holgate left back.
I don't think there's a right answer. I really don't. I don't know what I'm going to see on Saturday with the team news, and I don't know what I'd be happy with. I really don't. For years now, we've been really poor in recruitment of fullbacks, and it's strange that I'm not the biggest fan of Vitali Mikhailenko, but our balance was completely off without him. I fear it will be again. I don't know whether you're right and you set up with the five. I don't know whether you put McNeil left back, you put Patterson to keep McNeil in front of him, ask McNeil to help. I don't know the answer.
I think that was part of his plan against City, though, was if you look at where, you know, you'd have those heat maps of the average positions, Holgate was so central relative to where Patterson was on the other side. I don't know if that was the message. Look, tuck in like you're a left-sided centre-back. That gives us a bit more support in there. Let McNeil deal with the really wide player, you know, whenever he goes out there, and you just be an extra defender in there. So it looks like that was the plan last week. As you said, I just don't think it worked, and I just don't want to see that again, particularly because if he does what you suggest, in terms of putting Patterson, or you offered Patterson left back, you're taking away what was arguably one of our strongest assets against Brighton. He was brilliant in terms of his energy on that right hand side. So, yeah, I think it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't type situation for Sean. It's a huge call.
What the hell do we do if Lewin's not fit?
I don't even want to enter that,
because the manager said he's due to train tomorrow.
Let me just say one thing. Obviously, Sean Dyche has been very patient with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's clearly been vindicated in the sense that he's come back in great shape. The three things at play here. One, there's the fact that I think Sean Dyche has been thinking, if I can get him back for the last five games, they're so critical. and that could get us over the line. Two, Dominic Calvert-Lewin said, and the manager's confirmed, he didn't want to come off against Man City. And that's not like Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's normally the first person to say, right, I need to come off here. Three, we've only got two games left. I think the manager's going to do a Ledley King with him and say, don't train. Give your all for the match when you can. We'll take it off. You'll get another week to rest and you'll play that last game and then we'll deal with the ramifications in the summer. I think that's the attitude here. I don't see, and this is hope, this is, you know, the optimist in me thinking here, but also the realist, I don't see how Calvert-Lewin doesn't play the weekend unless, you know, because they've had a scan on it. There's no serious damage. So, you know, that's a big factor. It's a bit of a psychological thing, but he's given him a week to rest. I do not see how he doesn't play the weekend. I really
players,
don't.
There's many players out there who do. They just say, look, I won't train and there's only two games left. And maybe that is the case. Maybe Dyche will do that. Maybe, I don't know. I probably think I'm a bit more glass half empty than your glass half full. I think maybe
you're glass half empty.
You're risking the Bournemouth game. Does the manager and his staff say, look, if you just don't play him, he's back next. He's fully fit next week. It's a few more days. You've got him for Bournemouth. He could go down in minute 15.
But what it say? We get beat by Wolves and Leeds win on Sunday. It's out of our hands then. So the Bournemouth game only matters after the Wolves game, and I've got no doubt, given the type of person that Sean Dyche is, or he seems to be. Obviously, not my best mate, and not before the Everton fans jump on me. He definitely seems to be a one game at a time type of person. I think he's making assumptions. He's like, look, let's focus on one game at a time. Let's get this game won, or let's do what we can to win it. Then we approach the Bournemouth one. Because, again, coming on the flip side of the coin, if we go and beat Wolves and Leeds get beat or even draw, then, you know, we're almost
if Leeds get beaten, we win, we're done. I think.
We are done mathematically.
Yeah, but so that's fine.
If Leeds draw, we've got a couple of goals on them, or we've got at least one goal on them. So it's not done mathematically, but it's very, very close to being done as well. So I really do think we've just got to go all out for this game. Not all out attack, but we've got to go all out to win this game. Use whatever, you know, assets we've got at our disposal and hope to have it put to bed.
Do you know what? I think you're probably right, listen to you. I think if Lewin can give you 65, 70 minutes, I think you've got to play him. You've got to play him. And do you know what? Do you know if he can't? You put him on the bench and you say, if we're losing or we're drawing at 70, you're coming on. And if we're winning, if Ellis Sims is playing all right and the shape's good, then we might not need you. But I think he's got to be involved in some way. I think we're at the point of the season now where there's probably no point in looking ahead to the next week. It's looking ahead to now, like you just said.
Well, you just mentioned something I was going to ask you next. I know where I stand on it. Is it Ellis Sims that comes in for you then if Lewin's off fifth?
Got to be.
Is it not Damari Gray?
No. Damari Gray. Now, look, I've always been a bit of a supporter of Damari Gray. I think if Everton needs a goal, he's the most likely. But I was sitting on Sunday against City. I was sitting in the main stand. So I see things a little bit differently in the main stands, obviously. There was a moment, I'm not too sure who it was, their fullback, I don't know his name, the young fullback they've got.
Lewis?
So they started off, Lewin, Gray and the City fullback, quite close. Their fullback sprints, Gray gave up, and Dyche went ballistic. City got 30 yards up the pitch and Gray gave up, tracking back, and Dyche was screaming. Dyche looked at Steve Stone and he moaned and he was like that, as if to say, I don't think he'll play Damari Gray now. I don't think he'll see him unless you have to. I think he'll play Ellis Sims. I think, and Dyche has showed that. You go to Anfield, you go to Old Trafford, when you're looking for a goal at Stamford Bridge, he's looked at Ellis Sims. I think Morpé came on Sunday to probably protect Sims.
Not a bad suggestion. I was going to kind of counter that and say, well, why does he bring Morpé on our time? But you might be right there as well. We're assuming. I mean, I'm assuming you kind of half agree with me that Calvert-Lewin does play. The only changes maybe in that back five, but I don't think I don't really think it affects the players in front of them. I still think we'll see James Garner Guy, Decore, and it'll be, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And I mean, if we play that back five, it would have to be Inanna who comes in, wouldn't it, as well?
I don't know. So James Garner got subbed, and again, I've just said maybe he's protecting Sims, so I can't go full out on this, but James Garner got subbed on Sunday. Onana finishes the game. I probably think he'll bring Onana in for Garner regardless. I just think he'll bring Onana back in now. I think James Garner was very, very good at Brighton. He was very, very good at Leicester. It's probably a bit harsh to say he wasn't good on Sunday because you're playing the best team in the world, but he gets subbed. I think he plays Onana. I think he plays Garner Guy. I think he keeps the back four.
If we keep the back four, then the one swap is potentially Onana for
because we're going to counter attack, aren't we? We're going to be a counter attack inside that. And the shape that we got goals at Leicester, the shape that we got goals at Brighton is four at the back. I don't know whether he just, unless Holgate is completely, his mind's gone or he's stinking in training. I think Holgate plays now, whether it's right or left back, I don't know, but I do think Holgate plays into back four. But I do think Onana plays. And if Lewin isn't fit or if Lewin starts on the bench, I think for set pieces to have Onana in there is a big thing.
Yeah, I don't think he will. I still think he'll stick with James Garner. I think he just like that kind of two-hold midfielders, which is where Garner's been playing alongside that other Garner guy. And I think he likes having the shackles off on Decore. And I think if they were going to swap anyone, it would be Onana for Decore. And I don't think that Decore deserves to come off the scene, in any way, shape, or form. So, okay, with all that said, I've already put my cards on the table in our other preview. So it's going to be an easy one for me in terms of repeating that. But give us your prediction.
I'm minded to agree with you now. I know where you've gone with this. I've got to let my heart rule my head on this podcast, and I'm going to go Everton win 2-0. I'm going to say Sky Sports put the scenes on a full time on Soccer Saturday, and that away end is going absolutely berserk, and the players are being lauded, and we get out of there in a such a strong position. Now that's my heart talking, but I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to go 2-0 Everton.
Fair play, mate. Just on that note, I've been doing everything I can to try and get a ticket for Saturday. So if anyone's watching this and somehow they've got one, please drop us a message. You'll be, you can have your name on a across the park statue. I think that I come across the ticket before, I think, £350. I'm not that well off, despite what Mills tells you. But yet, if anyone's got a ticket going, then, please let me know. As I said, I've already put my cards on the table. I'm going to go with my heart, as you'll hear from the opposition podcast. I said my head saying this, my heart says that. I'm going to go with my heart and say 2-1 Everton. I do think Wolves will get in the score sheet. I think if it's 2-1, which again I'm saying it will be, I think we'll go two in front. Wolves will maybe make a few changes, bring some of the players off the bench that are maybe making an impact. They have got a pretty deep squad compared to us. I think that'll be enough to get them a goal, and we'll hold on for what could be a momentous victory.
Well, mate, I hope you're right. I think we've said this phrase before, but this is it now. The run's here. We've pointed to the run. We've pointed to having Fulham at home and as part of the run, and Brighton and City were difficult. We're navigating through. This is absolutely it. I don't want to come on this podcast next week and say this is it again. These two fixtures is what a lot of Evertonians, and I've been a big proponent on this podcast, get to Wolves, get to Bournemouth, be alive, be out the zone. This is it. This is absolutely everything. With everything that comes in the future, whether we're up or down, with the investigations from the panel and possible punishments, with investment coming, with that amazing new stadium looking like you can play in it now when you drive past it. This is it. Everton have to stay up this season, and these are the games that you're doing in.
Amen. Amen to that. Just one more mention again for our sponsors, Globe. If you're like myself and you're not chilling out £350 for a ticket to Wolves, and your wife's making you save that money for the bathroom, please give them a shout. As I say, it's rare that they've got availability, and they've got some in August for booking. So give them a shout. They'll come down. They'll give you the quote. They'll give you mates rates because you've mentioned Across the Park podcast. So take advantage of that. Thanks again for everyone for tuning in. As I say, check out the opposition podcast. It's a good listen. Up the fucking toffees. Come on.